Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I had a fantastic treat, an ongoing fantastic treat, in getting to know Adela Lizante. And Adela is the collections manager at the Santa Barbara Historical Museum. She's been there since 2015. And I've gotten to know Adela because she kindly asks occasionally for some ideas of what do I have here. And lately, we did a collection together of a number of historic chairs, and that was so much fun. And previous to that, we did a little bit of collaboration together in regards to period hats and dresses, because Adela was mounting a show along with Melinda Morgan Stowell, the exhibits director at the Natural History Museum. And the show is about feathers. And we're going to talk all about that and the idea of why feathers are a fashion statement, what happened in the universe that made feathers a fashion statement, how that connects with the conservation of birds, and how that's so important. And we had these two wonderful minds working together, Adela Lisanti and Mel Morgan Stowell, on the show. And last Wednesday, they were kind enough to give me a tour of the show. And dear listener, if you haven't seen it, it's beautiful. I mean, the whole thing is beautiful. Not only are the fashions beautiful, but the way everything is presented is beautiful. And it's in a very wonderful setting of Tiffany blue. Everything is glowing and everything is beautifully restored. So it's just a feast for the eyes. I can't recommend it enough. And it'll be up, I think, Melinda, it's going to be up till when?
Till September 7th.
Okay. So you have some time to see it. I was really amazed. And I have to tell you, when we were there, I was really amazed at the people that were coming in. Little children, mainly families with little kids. And, you know, that was kind of an amazing thing because the kids were so interested. Why? Because the way that the show is presented, it's really for all ages. I mean, Mel's done audio, bird sounds, bird chirps. There's a little seating area where a child can sit and have his photograph done. And everything is accessible to kids. You know, the exhibits are pretty much floor and ceiling glass. So, you know, any child can. And then they get a sense of what it was like, because the idea that fashion and headwear was such an important part of society, you know, that's not how we are today. I mean, you know, we just don't have that thing where, as a matter of fact, the last time I wore a hat was in the Catholic church when I was growing up, and we had to wear hats, and then we didn't want to wear hats anymore. We wore chapel veils, and that was the end of hats. So, you know, we want to talk a little bit about that. So I have with us Adela Lisanti, collections manager, been with Santa Barbara Historical Museum, as I said, since 2015. I didn't know, but she's born and raised in Goleta. Strong roots in the Latino community there. She studied cultural anthropology, sociology, and Mexican-American studies as an undergrad and graduate student, both in California and Mexico. And before she came back to Santa Barbara, she worked at a museum in Hawaii. She loves birding, which is amazing. I didn't know that. She loves birding and spending time at the beach with her husband, former pro surfer and Clark Surfboard Company owner Chris Lisanti. I had to look Chris up, Adela, because I thought, the idea of such an intellect as you have, it's always amazed me that the intellectual woman and the kind of sports-minded man and how they get together. That's just, you know, and I have to ask you, Adela, where did you meet Chris? Was it in Hawaii?
No, here in Santa Barbara. Hi, everybody. It's a pleasure to be on this show here with Elizabeth. I love my hometown. I love everything that Santa Barbara represents, everything that Santa Barbara offers. And it was such an honor to work with Mel, the Natural History Museum, such a prestigious institution. And it's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, I didn't want to set off the interview by saying, how'd you meet your husband? But I couldn't resist. Give me 2 seconds that, and I'll get back on track. I want to introduce Melinda, as she goes by Mel, Morgan Stowell, Exhibits Director for the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History. She's been with the museum for about a year and a half. She previously worked at the Santa Barbara Zoo. Ron Block's just recently retired, didn't he? He was a great friend. Graduate of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. She previously worked with the University of Florida Extension with local food systems. I got to know what that's all about. And Walt Disney Worldwide Conservation Education. And Mel, thanks for being on the show. Director of Marketing and Communications I have with us. And that's Stephanie Evers Armstrong. And she's been at the Museum of Natural History for about a year and a half. She's worked in many, many positions around town in marketing and communications. Richard, let's go to quick break. Oh, Richard is on break. Let me put you on mute. And I want Melinda to introduce the exhibit. Will you do that, Mel?
Sure. All right. So our exhibit is called Fashion Fatale. We've just opened. We will, as Elizabeth mentioned, be running through September 7th. It's an examination of the use of feathers in fashion and culture and how those uses impacted natural populations.
And then, Mel, what was the biggest challenge you had in putting the show together?
Oh, my gosh. This is a little bit experimental. We've tried some different means and methods of displaying some of the artifacts and some of the objects. The best part of the process was working with Adela. She has been absolutely fantastic in sharing her collection, sharing the vision, helping us along with the visuals. Been an absolutely fabulous partnership. I'd love to do it again. As her director said, they've got weird stuff, we've got weird stuff, and we should work together to put our weird stuff together.
Interesting way you put that, yes. Interesting way you put that. And I guess I have the same question for Adela. What was a big challenge for you in this show?
Well, Elizabeth, believe it or not, the Historical Museum's collection includes 100,000 artifacts, 100,000 pieces that not all have been digitized or identified. So it's been a lifelong project here to identify everything we've got downstairs, including feathered items. So the big task was to identify what is feathered, what exactly it represents, and what we can offer the Natural History Museum. So I felt like a hunter looking for skins down in the vaults. It was a couple months actually worth of a project, and we discovered over 200 items that were feathered. And the strongest part of that collection was 85 feathered hats representing the 19th through the mid-20th century, and 50 feathered fans from the late 19th to the early 20th century. And those are the predominant pieces that we decided to offer the Natural History Museum. But that was the challenge. And I'm very glad that that challenge was presented to us so that we were able to accomplish that challenge successfully.
You know, one thing I learned when you were kind enough to take me on the tour, I learned that the historical museum has quite a collection of clothing. I had no idea. And I've been a docent at the museum on and off for 15 years. And I never knew that it was so extensive. And I also was introduced by Adela to the fact that there's a strong connection between the real powerhouse females that built Santa Barbara and the clothing collection. And I wonder, Adela, if you'd speak a little to that.
Yes, of course. So these gowns were collected since the 1930s, since the museum's founding in 1932. And I have a little write-up here about that collection. Some of the styles that we chose to include in the natural histories exhibit are from formal to day wear, a lot of couture, lots of sequins, glass beading, fine fabrics, silks, chiffons, lace. I mean, these are significant gowns that were worn to major events like at the White House by the wife of General Otis, who raised the flag at Manila during the Spanish-American War. That's just one piece. Another gown was worn by a prominent De La Guerra descendant. All of these gowns are, of course, accompanied by beautiful accessories and feathered hats. And going back to what you were saying about the prominent Santa Barbarans, yes, these were donated to the museum by De La Guerra descendants, the Dibleys, movers and shakers like Pearl Chase, Carolyn Stanwood, whose husband was president of Old Spanish Days for over two, three decades, Ghana Walska of Lotus Land, who we all know, Catherine K. Haley. She was a very prominent Ventura County pioneering family. Her house actually used to sit where Lake Casitas is today. About six of her hats are in this show. And of course, we can't leave out Beverly Jackson, who was a big supporter of the textile collection, especially in the 90s. She was a news press columnist and an international traveler who gifted a major portion of her collection of antique Chinese clothing and accessories. And that includes that very regal and stunning kingfisher feather headdress and jewelry. And they're not just adorned with kingfisher feathers, they're also adorned with very exotic coral, jade, pearl. These are pieces circa 1880s. And these are all pieces, some highlights that you're going to see in the exhibit. So you got to come and see the show. Yeah.
Adela, you know, I want to introduce this thought by giving our listeners just a little taste of the women behind the show, Mel and Adela. The Natural History Museum was based on birds, and I think it's oology, the study of eggshells and eggshells. That was the beginning of our Santa Barbara Natural History Museum, and because of that, there's quite a collection of taxidermied birds in the museum's collection. And what they've done is they've shown the taxidermy birds that were harvested for the feathers throughout the 18th and 19th and early 20th century. So they've got the taxidermy birds displayed as well. And the very far case to the entryway, Adela stopped and said, I have never seen that bird before, and it's very close to my cultural roots. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking how interesting these birds are that make us identify with certain times and things that have happened in our lives. What was that bird, Adela? Tell me again.
In Guatemala, the country of origin where my mom is from, the state or the country's bird, its main bird, they actually named their money after it, is known as the Quetzal bird. And it has a very long tail that curls, and it's made up of red plumes and green plumes, and I had never seen one live, and it was very personal to see it there in the case, and yes. I'm glad that it was added.
Let's go to a quick break. When we get back from the break, I want to mention something that I want to come back to something Mel said. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Stephanie. Stephanie, am I saying it Evers or Evers, Stephanie?
Evers.
Evers Armstrong. She is Director of Marketing and Communications for the Natural History Museum. Adela Lasanti, Collections Manager at the Santa Barbara Historical Museum, and Melinda Morgan Stoll. She's Exhibits Director for the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History. You know, made me think of something in my life, and I'm going to get all verklempt about this, but I was very, very close to my maternal grandmother. And come from an ethnic family. We called her by a certain ethnic name that was meant grandmother. And she was a bird lover. And she had two things that one I have collected over the years. And I've actually, you've probably seen them, Adela. It's a small cage about so big. And there's a mechanical bird in the cage. And the mechanical bird tweets and spins around. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, like a gilded cage. And it's a model of a bird in a cage. And it tweet, 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 you know, spins around. And she loved that. And also, I realized that shortly after she died, that the birds in her yard were still singing. And that meant to me that she was still around, that her spirit was still around. And so the connection with birds is pretty impressive, I think, for human beings. And how I want to kind of work this in is to ask Melinda how close we came to extinction on some of these species that were harvested for fashion's sake. And I guess I want to just throw this out, and maybe one of the three of you can answer this question. Why are feathers throughout the ages? Does anyone have a sense of why they are important for adornment in general? I mean, even Nefertiti had a bird headdress. So those are my two questions, but I want to start with the idea of conservation of the birds, Mel, if you
so
would.
Just to give you an idea, in 1886, there was an ornithologist named Frank Chapman, and he walked through a street in New York City and looked at the number of hats that women were wearing that had feathers. He counted 542 hats adorned with birds or feathers representing 70 different species. And those would be from egrets to woodpeckers. During that time period, about 5 million birds were killed each year. Unfortunately, not only were they killed, but they were killed during nesting season. So it meant that they killed the adults to harvest their feathers and left the young to die, which was quite unfortunate. It was called the plume bloom. Breeding colonies were raided. Entire rookeries were wiped out in the state of Florida. Egrets in particular were quite vulnerable. And this continued until the realization was that we were wiping out native species. So the Audubon Society decided to lobby Congress to pass the Migratory Bird Act Treaty of 1918. And what it did is it prohibited hunting of migratory birds during nesting season. The reason that this helped is it helped to preserve birding populations. And also it gave the population an idea of just how far the practice had gone in terms of commercialization of using feathers. When you were talking about how feathers were used historically, earlier in history, it was more of a social status. It began with divinity and the use of feathers in something like Montezuma's Pinocho. It was more a thought of nobility and divinity. But as time went along, feathers became more of a mass commercialized product. When that happened, that's when we started to see the depredation of bird species. And then the consciousness of what we were actually doing to those species.
I understand. Is when you say connected with divinity, I can only assume it's because they fly, because they're closest to heaven, because they're closest to the sky.
Yes.
And yeah. Okay. All right.
When you mentioned Cleopatra, that was precisely what the connotation was.
Understood. Okay. And then one thing I saw in reference at the show, and I'm wondering about this, is that the use of feather adornment for males. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wonder, can anyone speak to me about that? What was the history of male feathers and male adornment?
I think the closest parallel that you're going to get is when you look at bird species, you look at the male of the species and the female of the species. The one who is most often adorned is the male of the species. And normally those feathers are either part of mating rituals or dominance rituals. So when you look at it and you think about the men of that time, of earlier centuries, they would have viewed the use of feathers as an extension of that dominance, an extension of their finery and their importance in society.
I see. Okay. So now we get to the point of what birds were most popular and used for what. And I know that when I was at the show, you were pointing out one particular bird with an amazing kind of arcing, feathery plumage, and that there was only maybe four feathers like that per bird, and yet a hat would require X number of birds to be sacrificed on the altar of fashion. And so Mel, tell me about that. What was that bird?
So that bird is lyrebird. You will find them now in Australia, fortunately, although at the height of the use of feathers, you wouldn't have found many. They were hunted to near extinction as well. And again, they have these gorgeous, long, curling feathers that were beautiful for hats. But as you say, very few feathers per bird. So the number of birds that were hunted to supply the demand for those hats was exorbitant, and unfortunately resulted in your collapse of that species.
So, Stephanie, a question for you, head of marketing and communications. Who's your target audience for this show?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, as our Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History, we offer a wide array of visitors, from children to adults. This show is predominantly for our adult market. Though it certainly is something that we've seen a lot of families go through, and it's a great opportunity for conversation starters for families to also talk about just general fashion choices, the history of the use of plumage for fashion. And it's a really beautiful showcase. And though it has a more adult audience, it is something that is something the whole family can truly come and enjoy.
Excellent. And Richard, we're saying we have to go to quick break, but I have a question that I'm going to put forward before we go to break, so maybe I could get a consensus between Adela and Mel. So I did an internship at Winterthur in Delaware, a wonderful, famous museum of American artifacts. And Winterthur has an extensive textile collection of early American textiles. And I remember being in the wing of the museum that conserves and stores the textiles. And studying conservation methods at the time, and this was, a number of years ago, but it fairly sophisticated for its time. We then took, as part of the course, we took a class at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where they have the extensive costume collection, and we toured with their curator of textiles as well at that museum. And we saw the conservation techniques. And one of the things that stuck with me was that they have these long boxes in which, the gowns or whatever tablecloths or such like are stored. And the boxes are, museum quality, acid-free, et cetera, et cetera. The papers are acid-free. And I remember she opened one and it smelled very kind of tart, tangy, not a pleasant smell. And she said, well, we can't do anything about that. We can't stop some of these sequins, S-E-Q-U-I-N-S, sequins from going kind of south. And I said, why? She said, well, in the early history of sequins, they were made from such things as tortoise back. Mm-hmm. And so they're natural fibers, they're natural material. And of course, today they aren't. But there's all these little things that we probably don't know about the things we wear. And in the past, we didn't know that either. But yes, I mean, I mentioned to Adela that I had probably 500 hats in storage, and I have them in a temperature controlled storage area, because I collected some designer, big name designers. I have Schiaparelli and Chanel and all these because I would go to thrift stores, Adela, and I could, okay, that's definitely Schiaparelli, and that's the Dolly inspired lobster hat. And because I recognized it, you know, and nobody else would recognize it. And I used to go to a number of thrift stores all over the Central Coast around Halloween because nobody really knew what hats they were, you know, giving to kids to trick or treat with. And so I picked up many, many hats in my years. And it's always been a challenge to stop the deterioration, especially with feathers, mm-hmm. and feathers and any kind of natural fabric, fur as well. And so when we get back from the break, I'd love to hear both of you speak a little bit about the conservation that both of your museums, because we've got the Historical Museum represented, we've got the Natural History Museum represented, both of your museums, how they tackle this really thorny, I can't think of any other material that runs the risk of leaving our planet than textiles. So anyway, let's talk about that when we get back from the break. Hey, Richard, let's go to quick break. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Stephanie, am I saying it Evers or Evers, Stephanie?
Evers.
Evers Armstrong. She is Director of Marketing and Communications for the Natural History Museum, Adela Lisanti, Collections Manager at the Santa Barbara Historical Museum, and Melinda Morgan-Stoll. She's Exhibits Director for the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History. And we're celebrating a new show recently went up that is at the Natural History Museum, but it's a total collaboration between the two museums. And it has to do with historic use of feathers and use of birds' plumage to adorn as a fashion statement. And it is phenomenally beautiful. Both the clothing and you will be so impressed that Santa Barbara has such an extensive textile collection, such an extensive clothing collection, clothing, hats and dresses dating way back, early 1930s. I mean, it's amazing what the museum has. I had no idea. And Adela, how many pieces of textile material do you have at the museum?
In total, the Santa Barbara Historical Museum's holdings are over 100,000 artifacts. That's about 800 women's dresses, 50 feathered fans, 85 feathered hats, and many, many other pieces.
So before the break, I was talking about the challenges that I had no idea what went on behind the scenes to mount a show. I'm a fashion nut, but to mount a show at, you know, the Fashion Institute or the Met or Winterthur, what went on as far as the repair, the conservation, the methods to stabilize clothing, the remaking of supporting fabrics to support, for example, I remember at Winterthur, they wanted to show some very early gowns of first ladies. And, you know, they wanted the outside to be the focal point, but the interior had to be restructured. And I was wondering if maybe start with Mel, what the challenges were, what the museum goes through. And Stephanie, you might know too, what the museum goes through to stabilize such things.
Well, that really would be a better question for one of our directors, Krista Fay. She is involved with our research center and our collections. How we exactly do that with our specimens, she would be a better person to speak of it. Why, I can talk to that. When we do present our collections and our examples of birds, what we really hope to do is inspire people to go and seek those birds in nature. we want to inspire the interest in the animal that you might never see, but we'd love you to go and try to view these birds in nature and also to understand why conservation of those birds is so important.
Oh, Adela, can you speak to that issue, how the museum, yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so when you were bringing up the work that you were doing back east and the time you spent at the Met, it reminded me that these materials are organic materials, and the best you can do is slow down the process and be respectful of that fragile state that these pieces are in. You know, with living here in Santa Barbara, you'd think that because we'd have such beautiful tempered climate, we have control down in the vaults, in the spaces where all these things are housed, which is actually downstairs in the basement. The answer is no, there isn't full control. And, you know, we have spikes in humidity and temperature. And that was the case a couple of years ago. But since I've been with the museum, we've installed an entire proper HVAC system. This is control of humidity, control of temperature. We have new lighting. We have new paint jobs. We have new moving shelving units. So we've actually saved this collection for decades into the future, thankfully. And with that, I'd also like to add that you have something obviously in an archival box. This is acid-free tissue. These are things that are not releasing gases and chemicals that are going to ruin these pieces, obviously. You also have to take into account what these feathers state are in. Are they natural? Are they in their original color? Are they free, or are they stitched and hemmed and glued and colored and trimmed? And all of these factors play a role in its life expectancy. Yeah. And these are the feathers that you're going to see in the show. You're going to see many, many different styles, many different ways a plume can be presented, and all for the purpose of social status, statements, and just being, I mean, what do humans do? We like to show off. We like to be that peacock. And so unfortunately, with style, brought that on. And who was affected by this but these beautiful species of birds? Yeah.
So this is just a strange question, but both of you, you know, I can tell you my favorite era for hats. I like the hats of 1770 to 1780.
Oh, that's a long, we don't cover
yeah,
that.
And they, and they actually haven't stayed around long at that period, but you see they are portrayed in portraiture. You know, and it's the Gainsborough, you know, the massively gorgeous big statement hats. And I wanted to know, first of all, a question for both of you, your favorite era of hat, Adela and Mel, and maybe Stephanie, if you have a favorite era of hat. And then I also want to know, in the collection, and I know what Mel's favorite's going to be. It's the one that her museum commissioned, I bet. But I want to know what your favorite hat is, all three of you, what your favorite hat is in the show. Let's go first with Mel. So your favorite era, Mel.
Well, my favorite era actually is the flapper era. And I do love the horsehair tiara that's on one of our models. The cool thing about that is we had initially thought that that was a feathered tiara. But when Krista took a look at it, she discovered it was horsehair, which was really cool. We were beginning to move towards describing how we were using more domesticated animals to infill for wild populations. But I will say that the modern hat, Joss's creation, is absolutely amazing because of the color, the structure, the way that she constructed it. It is
okay. So we have to describe it. So if you guys could picture what a feathered, blue and white feathered tornado cyclone would look like, it's absolutely. I mean, I would just love to have that hat. So it's a hat that slings off the forehead and wraps around and kind of shoots up. It's got to be at least 2 feet of material, you know, of movement. And the whole thing moves because of the patterns of the feathers are sort of staggered along the movement of the swirl of the hat. And I want Mel to tell us how she commissioned that. What led you to speak to the artist?
So I was doing some research online, trying to find examples of modern construction, and Joss came to my attention. She designs for Royal Ascot most often. She's a Scot and an amazing person to speak with. She's explained how she creates her hats, and I wish I could tell you all of that, but she is very meticulous in how she carves and steams and arranges those feathers to achieve that effect. It really is quite amazing. It is a work of art.
And it just you can just see how it would make sort of the wearer feel so interesting, and so because the way that it swirls, the it swirls down to the face basically, and so it's all about confidence, and it's all about, oh, it's just amazing. And you have to watch your elevator doors and such like
Most
with a hat like
definitely.
that. So, Adela, your favorite period of hat and your favorite hat in the show?
I would have to say the Kingfisher feather headdress, just because when you think about women's fashion and especially American women, you think about European, Paris, all of that, but you don't think about Chinese, exotic and unique way of presenting a feather on a piece, on an accessory, on a hat. Usually you actually would see the plume standing up, but in the case of these kingfisher feather accessories and hat, it's pressed on. Well, I think you can probably speak more to how it's done, but you wouldn't have imagined it was a feather. You have to look at it closely. And I like that when I'm down in my vaults and I'm exploring new things, there are times where I'm not surprised by things, or I'm aware of something, but it's very rare that I'm like, what? This is what this is? This is different. So I was very, very impressed by that piece.
And I also have to say, and I want Stephanie to chime in on this, but I also have to say that there is a real spiritual feeling to the show. And I have to say, I think it's because of the way human beings conceive of birds anyway. But the fact is that the designer of, now, Mel, who designed the show?
That was Jenna Savage Davis. She's an amazing designer. And when you see that aesthetic, that is Jenna. It was meant to be airy, to call to the spirit of the birds as you're walking through the exhibit, to kind of examine the hard and soft of the usage of feathers. The beauty of it is amazing. The darker side, we kind of leave to our audience to discern how they feel about that.
So, Stephanie, I wanted to ask you your favorite era and your favorite hat in the show.
I actually have to say that Adela summarized it beautifully. That is iconically, I think, my favorite piece. And I think you summarized all the points so well, I can't even emphasize it further, but
So, what Adela is describing is a 19th century Chinese noblewoman's headdress, and you'd almost not call it a hat per se because there's so much going on. There's little bits and pieces that move. There's, as Adela said, there's feathers that they are lending themselves to color. There's coral beadwork. I mean, it's like a crown. And when we talk about, I was Mel, I was saying about the designer when we were there, all talking together. That is a that turquoise color. That's the kingfisher color. The kingfisher feather color is a regal color in Chinese mythology because that blue was a strange blue that was only used on certain porcelain. Anyway, Richard, let's go to a quick break. When we get back from the break, I want to mention something that I want to come back to something Mel said. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Stephanie. Stephanie, am I saying it Evers or Evers, Stephanie? Evers Armstrong. She is Director of Marketing and Communications for the Natural History Museum. Adela Lasanti, Collections Manager at the Santa Barbara Historical Museum, and Melinda Morgan Stoll. She's Exhibits Director for the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History. And so I'm going to ask a question based on something that I experienced in my master's degree, which is in architectural history. And I was studying with the director, I should say my thesis advisor was the director of the San Diego Maritime Museum, a longtime museum person in the nautical world. So he was my advisor, and he made a point to take us as a class, we had a museum studies class, to take us as a class to an exhibit that had a bias, a real definite bias, and it was meant to have a bias. And one thing that Mel said that I wanted to hammer home, you don't in your exhibit, Mel, you do not come away with the pejorative feeling of, wow, it's been a terrible slaughter of a million birds. You don't go away with that feeling. You know it implicitly, but the museum's not hammering it home. It's doing it in a delightful way. And I wanted to know how much you thought about that, both of you, Adela and Mel, how much you thought about we could go into a real dark direction here if we wanted to. Tell me more.
It was a large discussion with all of us in terms of the direction we wanted to follow. We had seen other exhibits with precisely the same content who did go that way. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's a very powerful statement. However, when we looked at the overwhelming amount of exhibits that went that way, we thought we might try a different approach, particularly with regard to where we're going with fast fashion, what we're doing in our current usage and consumption, to try to get people to say, you know, this is beautiful, and or but there are consequences always, but hitting somebody over the head with that sometimes seems to be a little bit judgy, if you will. We all have to come to our own decisions as to what we do as consumers, what we do in our lives. And that was the point of the exhibit.
And it's so interesting that you're tying it in with this fast fashion. And then Adela at the same time is telling us that the museum has 800 gowns. And, you know, I remember my mom had a green two-piece, like a suit and a sleeveless silk dress and a suit coat. And she had that for at least 35 years. And that was something that she wore for various, special events, I should say. She had matching shoes that were dyed to match this green. And I think about our closets today, and I'm just as bad as everyone. I'm the worst, probably. We don't really respect the clothing in the same way. And Adela, I wanted to know, how many gowns would you say would have been top of the line at the time?
Well, I first wanted to start by saying that as an educational institution, it is our responsibility to own up to dark chapters of the past and bring to light these items, like these feathered items, bring them forward. Although they're no longer appropriate to wear today, they still need to be shared. So that's how I felt about it. We always have to do this in a very proactive way, because if we don't, how can we make change for the better? So the idea is, don't shove this idea in people's faces. Let them decide what they want to take and walk away with. So I really appreciate Mel's concept and the way that they went about approaching that. And in terms of what is high-end, what is crème de la crème couture, gosh, it's quite, if it's not the majority, it's a good percentage. And that's because imagine someone's trousseau. This is something that you inherited by from friends and family and things that you purchased for when you were going to get married and go and live your life with your husband. Well, these are some beautiful pieces that you might have worn once when you were very skinny and very young and you never wore again. So these pieces are in pristine condition, and they were purchased from international couture houses from all over the world in different times and culture. And these are pieces that women in Santa Barbara had, and they inherited from their great grandmothers. And that's what represents our collection.
That's it's so wonderful to know after being associated with the museum almost 20 years, I had no idea. and this show really shows it off. Stephanie, what do you hope to bring to the kids in this show?
I think that a big part of the museum is about inspiring curiosity. So allowing that to be an instigator for conversations about conservation, and allowing there to be a lightheartedness that also can be, you know, admiring the beauty of these garments while also talking about the greater impact that we make as individuals. So I think that's a beautiful piece that we'd like families to take away when they visit the show.
I want to just give another shout out. This particular show is a must-see show, and it's a must-see show for everybody. Thank you very much, Adela. Thanks, Stephanie. Thanks, Mel. See you at the Natural History Museum. Bye.